Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
And a happy Friday to you all. Good morning and welcome aboard. And Mr. Mayor, good morning to you.
Good morning. I'm always impressed when I hear special co-host. I always wanted to be a special co-host.
Now listen, you're already the mayor. How much more do you need?
Well, I mean, special co-host on your show is more prestigious.
Aren't you kind to say so?
Well, I think your father and grandfather looking down probably would think so too.
Well, that's nice of you to even remember them as well. You made it through the snow.
Made it through the snow, and I think it's fair to say once again, the DSNY, the Department of Sanitation in New York, showed why they are the best. Other places have had big problems in plowing. I don't want to dump on any of them, if you'll pardon the pun. They just aren't used to, I guess, having as much snow as we have and don't have the investment that we do in men and women and equipment and training and management. But the bottom line is the Department of Sanitation comes through every time for us. And while I'm talking about it, and thank you for bringing it up and giving me a chance to compliment them, you at the same time wanted to talk about blood, I'm sure, didn't you?
Oh, absolutely. I'll be honest with you. I did see that the snow interrupts the blood supply and they need help.
Yeah, I mean, when people get sick, have accidents, need emergency operations or schedule ones, they still need blood no matter what the weather is like outside. And the way our blood system works, people donate blood, and it's pretty much a straight pipeline into the users, you know, into the hospitals where it's used to save lives. There's not a lot of middle room of storage where you can take care of differences in supply and demand. You have to have the supply match the demand all the time. And since the snow kept people at home, it's been a big problem. And, you know, the New York Blood Center was responsible for an emergency blood supply of roughly 20 million people because it's all the whole area around New York. And the estimates are that the storm cost them over 1,500 donors. So they're going to try to make it up. And if you want to give blood, you call 1-800-933-2566. That's 800-933-2566. Or you can visit www.nyc.newyorkbloodcenter.org. Or you can call
311.
Way to go. And also the
I'm like Pavlov's dog.
Absolutely. I'm happy to announce the mayor's office and the city council, Christine Quinn's idea, will be hosting a blood drive at City Hall on Tuesday, the first day of work, because Monday is a holiday, and we're going to help to try to refill the blood supplies. And your question is, will I be there? I'll try to be the first, but I'll certainly be among the first ones. Every time they have a blood drive, I try to give
blood. You know, Mr. Mayor, not to spend too much more time on this, but it is, as you point out, they're responsible for the blood supply for 20 million people. I think the really good story here is that New Yorkers and the people of the tri-state on a regular basis do indeed give a lot of blood.
Absolutely. And I can just tell you, John, it is so painless. There is just no pain. You sit there and you have a nice conversation with the people around you, and they always give you some Cheez-Its afterwards or sugar cookies, which get some sugar back in your system. Not good for my waistline, but I always look forward to that while they're taking my blood.
Okay. Speaking of things that were pleasurable and not very painful, I saw you standing between a couple of good-looking ladies for Fashion Week this week.
Fashion Week is an enormous part of our economy, and you know, John, you just got to do some things for the people.
That's why we reelected you.
I mean, I just, if I had to do it, they are all good looking and they are all very tall and very pleasant. And we kicked off Fashion Week. The event really was about something on Channel 25, New York City's in-house or outside, but in New York City's own TV station. And we're trying to do some stuff to promote Fashion Week. Fashion Week employs 100,000 people and billions of dollars of income. We are a bigger fashion capital than Paris, by a lot.
I was aware of that, and as you say, it's a huge industry, gigantic revenue generator for the industry, and obviously the city of New York and the state.
Yeah, I mean, I've always argued that New York City, the industries that really come here and thrive because this is the place to be are those where intellectual capital is and creativity is important, and there's nothing more creative than fashionistas. they, you know, every year come up with stuff, some of which I like, some of which I find not what I would wear. I'm a little bit conservative in my clothes. All my suits are roughly the same color gray.
Mr. Excitement when it comes to the clothing.
But it was fun, and this is the last time Fashion Week's going to be in Bryant Park, because next year it moves to Lincoln Center, and that's a very big deal. It's going to give them a lot more space. And we need to get more people to come here and create more jobs here. This really is a local job creation business.
All right. Yesterday, you talked about the pedestrian mall, made the decision to keep it. My question to you, we can talk about the actual decision and the study that was done, but are there any plans for not expansion of Times Square, but of the idea?
There are a lot of demands or requests from merchants in other areas in Manhattan and outside of Manhattan to close the streets in front of their stores. They think it is very good for business. Whether we'll do it or not, in each case, we'll take a look at it, but it's encouraging that people at least thinking out of the box and wanting to try new things. It clearly has helped business in Times Square and Herald Square, and they've done a number of surveys. The Times Square and Alliance did a survey. They found something like 76% of New Yorkers thought the project should be made permanent, and something like 68% of the retail managers in Times and Herald Square said the project should be made permanent. It does reduce traffic. Not as much as I would like, but I think one of the things people are missing is the comparisons are from the spring of 2009, before we put this in, to the fall of 2009, and fall has more traffic. There's something like 3% more cars entering the West Midtown zone from the north and south after this thing was started, and even so, we saw on average a 7% improvement. But the most important thing is we measure it two ways. One, you have somebody drive a car and somebody sitting next to them with a stopwatch and see how long it takes to go X distance. The other way is because of GPS now in all the taxis, we can take a look at every trip and say from X to Y, it took this number of minutes. And then you look to see how that is better or worse than what it took did before. And since you do a couple of million of these tests in the data, you know, the averages really do tell you something. And we also do it east side versus west side, because the question is, if the economy's bad, maybe there's less traffic, and that's why you have an improvement. But it turns out that if it's an increase or a decline in traffic, it should be in both sides of town. So comparing the east and the west is another important thing. And once again, that shows this really does make an improvement. So it's improving your the ability to get from here to there, not as much as I'd like, but more than, it's better than no improvement. It is good for business. The tourists love it. The people that work and live in these areas seem to love it. And it's also improved our safety. Remember, everybody was saying, traffic deaths are down, but pedestrian deaths were up slightly. Well, this is going to help bring them down. You can't complain about it and then not try to do something.
Mr. Mayor, while we're talking about cars, how has the Toyota problem impacted New York?
It really has not.
Because I know you have Toyotas. You've got Prius and Camrys.
We have 26,000 vehicles, including the largest fleet of Toyota Prius hybrids. We have 2,400 of them. But the only vehicle model the city owns that is affected by the recall is the model year 2010 Prius hybrid. And we have only 16 of those. A handful weren't even being used. And we've just taken the others off the road. Now, we have 165 additional of the 2010 Priuses currently on order, but these aren't in production yet and aren't delivered yet, and they'll presumably fix whatever's wrong. So it really hasn't hurt us. The city's cab fleet does have a lot of them, but what the Taxi and Limousine Commission did was we contacted the operators, and we're trying to get other cabs loaned to those. The fleet owners can just switch cabs because they have plenty, but individual owners who only own one, we're trying to get them a loaner cab that has not been recalled so that they can keep us safe but also earn a living.
All right, obviously it makes sense. Mr. Mayor, let me take a break right here. We'll come right back. We've got lots on the plate here this morning, and let me remind you that if you've got a question, the mayor will, I'm sure, have the answer. 800-321-0710 before we finish up. 800-321-0710. But if you want to get on the queue, you need to call right now. 800-321-0710.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg with John Gambling on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
We continue with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, 23 minutes after 8 o'clock. Let's see here, Mr.
John,
Mayor.
John, yeah. You know, you mentioned, we're talking about Priuses and then taxis. Our Taxi and Limousine Commission commissioner and chairman, the commission's chairman, Matt Dawes, is unfortunately not going to seek re-election to a reappointment to a new seven-year term. He has had two terms. He served the city for 14 years, and now he's going on. And I just wanted to say thank you, wish him the best. He will serve until we find a replacement. He's going into the private sector and also going to join the City University of New York's Transportation Research Center as a distinguished lecturer.
Well, let my curiosity come out here for just a second. What qualifications for the Taxi and Limousine Commission do you think you look for?
Well, you got to be, number one, smart. I mean, in the end, it's raw intelligence, whether it's you're going to run the Taxi and Limousine Commission, whether you're going to be a cop or a firefighter or a sanitation worker. You know, we keep raising the standards for all municipal workers. And the first thing that I think is important is because you never know what's going to happen on the job the next day. You got to be smart. And I can just tell you what Matt has done. We have this now, this credit card ability to pay in the cab. We have this GPS system. If you lose your wallet in a cab, you just call 311. Say, well, okay, where'd you get in the cab? Okay, where'd you end? Okay. They hit a few buttons, and up comes the cab driver that took you from A to B, and you call him up, and he says, yeah, I got the guy's wallet. I couldn't find where he is. And a number of people have told me that they have gotten stuff that they lost in the cab back because of the GPS and 311. It's really amazing. It's also hybrid cabs. So you got to be interested in technology and the environment. You got to have some common sense. It's not an easy job. People yell at you at some of these public meetings. And you got to work both with the drivers and the fleet owners and the public. And if anybody's interested, you should call
311.
Right. You know, people have gotten jobs for doing exactly that. You got to ask for the order.
Absolutely. So your reaction, have you talked with the Department of Homeland Security, Janet Napolitano, or his people in her office about what I read this week, that they're thinking of closing down or moving the Coast Guard group here in New York Harbor, the anti-terror division?
I didn't mention that one to her. I was speaking at an event sitting next to her, and I, in my speech, reasonably directly, without looking at her, looking at the audience, said, you know, one thing, Homeland Security funds should not be given out based on politics, but based on threats. And that's the same thing for positioning the resources in Homeland Security. I know Senator Schumer, and I think Senator Gillibrand as well, have been trying to make sure that this doesn't move out, because certainly Chuck has talked about this a number of times, how important it is to protect this port. We've got to protect other places. But whenever you find a terrorist, it's a map of New York in their pocket, not a map of any place else.
You're absolutely right. I mean, that just seems very short-sighted. I'm sure Boston has the same needs and desires, but I mean, to take it from here and move it there makes no sense whatsoever. Let's hope that they will
not
reconsider.
Not to me either.
Yeah, let's hope that they will reconsider that. St. Vincent's, not good, right? I see they're slashing salaries today on their executives, doctors, nurses, everybody.
Very difficult situation. It'd be fantastic if we could save St. Vincent's, but it's a medical care. When the country in Washington talks about reducing medical costs, that means by slashing reimbursements. That is goes directly to the heart of the revenue of hospitals. And St. Vincent's no different than any place else. If you pay less for medical care, they have less revenue. Now, some hospitals have managed to adapt to a changing world where payment plans are different and you are in hospital for a different length of time today. In many cases, the best medical advice is to go in the hospital, get your treatment, and get out quickly. And in the olden days, people spent a lot of time in hospitals. The average time that a woman who gives a normal birth spends in a hospital is very low today compared to what it was 20 years ago, except that's good. And it's great to get home, and it's probably safer to be at home if everything's normal. But on the other hand, it means fewer patient night beds, if you will, for the hospitals. That's their revenue. And St. Vincent's has merged with a number of other Catholic hospitals trying to save them. And this is a business where There's no great answers. Hospitals around the country are all struggling. Some have managed to be ahead of the curve, others are not. The hospital closure commission that the governor, or maybe it was the previous governor, put in place said there's more beds in New York City than we need. There's too many of them that are vacant at night, and that means the hospitals can't pay their staffs and the rent and that sort of thing. On the other hand, everybody wants a bed in their neighborhood, and how you balance those two is a very difficult thing, and St. Vincent's got caught up in this. And what can be done, I don't know. The governor has tried to put together a commission to work on it. He has made a couple of loans to St. Vincent's. The management of St. Vincent's has tried to cut their expenses. But if St. Vincent's is losing the $5 to $10 million a month that the newspapers say, they've got a real challenge ahead of them.
Isn't it interesting, the unintended consequences that the efficacy of medicine today, and as you pointed out, the short stay rather than the long stay, creates too many beds?
Well, you know, we all, I think one of the problems with the president's valiant attempt to do something about health care was it started out to reduce costs and improve care, and it wound up mainly Congress. And I think Congress is the one that did it, not the president. But Congress focused on coverage, of number of people covered, which is a separate problem. If you are going to reduce the quality of, or the quantity, or the cost, I'm sorry, of health care, you will reduce the number of people working in the industry and the number of hospitals that it can support. And people that work in those in the industry or want the hospitals in the neighborhood aren't going to be happy. If you were to really focus, which we should, on preventive care, that's good for society, but it's not good for people that work in the business of helping you when you get into trouble. So you're right. I don't know if they're unintended consequences. I think they are consequences that people are unwilling to stop and focus on. And what we should be doing is rationalizing our system. We pay more than double the amount that per person per year for health care in the United States than they do in Western Europe. In Western Europe, they pay something like a little over $3,000 per person per year. We pay over $7,000 per person per year. And you say, well, they don't get as good care. That's not true. Their life expectancy is a few years greater than life expectancy in the United States. So the first question we've got to ask ourselves is, what are we doing wrong? We're spending double the amount of money and getting less for it. And part of the answer is, in Europe, they do focus a lot more on preventive care. We got to sit down and see, maybe we've got the wrong people doing the wrong things in the wrong place. And if that's the case, you got to fix that. Better training for those people, finding the right slots for them and the right places for them. There's an awful lot of people that work in this industry that work very hard and devote their lives to helping others. We've got to find a ways to make them more efficient and make them in the right place and force them to accept the changes that are going to be necessary.
Who does that, though? It's called leadership. I mean, and it's got to be on a national basis.
Well, you know, the president has got a bear of a problem because of the partisanship at the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue. And I will say I have a lot of sympathy for him. I don't agree with him on everything, but boy, he is trying. And we've just got to come to the conclusion, Congress has to, that they got to look the public in the eye and say, you know, you can't have everything for nothing. Which do you want? Do you want more services? Well, in that case, you're going to pay for them. If you don't want to pay for them, you're going to have less services. And I don't think either side of the aisle is prepared to look the public in the eye and say that.
I couldn't agree with you more. Mr. Mayor, it's the half hour. Let me take another break. You take another cup of coffee, and I'll get right back to you in just a moment or so. 832, again, 800-321-0710 is our telephone number if you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
To tell John what you think, 800-321-0710. Call now. News Talk Radio, 710 WOR.
That is the telephone number, 800-321-0710. One line is open. If you've got a question, we've got the time. We got the mayor, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, on the line with me this morning. Have you talked with the governor? Has been busy with his own issues over the past week, but have you had the opportunity to talk with him about the upping of that mobility tax rate on New York City employers?
Well, he's been busy, I think is a fair way
yes.
to phrase. I like that. No, I have not. I think it's just an outrage. And this is a time to do that, and I will talk to him about it. Keep in mind, it's a long time between the governor proposing something and the legislature passing a law. So there's plenty of time to weigh in, but I think it is terrible economics. It's just not good policy. Transportation's a regional system. People are coming into the city for jobs. Driving those jobs out are going to hurt the people outside of the city. Property values outside of the city are high because of their proximity to the city. For them to say that, you know, it's not their problem, it's the city that should pay, it's just ridiculous. And you know, the tax, I don't know whether the tax hasn't brought in the amount of money they estimated because of poor estimation, or because they aren't collecting it in some places, or maybe people are going to pay it come the spring and they're just wrong that, you know, there's a delay in the revenues rather than a decrease over a longer period of time. We got to wait and see, but this is just terrible tax policy. Where it came from all of a sudden out of the blue, I don't know. I've talked to a number of state senators and assembly people, all of whom were just shocked that this proposal was floated. It also is a particular problem for an organization like the Senate, where control is pretty much evenly divided, and it just pits the senators that represent people in the city from senators that represent people in the surrounding counties against each other in a ways that nobody needs. Our state, we've got to pull together here. This is craziness, what's going on, and we've got to come up with a state budget that doesn't devastate the cities, and at the same time lets the state continue to pay their bills and provide services. The trouble is the state's been not great, I think it's fair to say, at controlling their own expenses. This is the problems we have been growing for years. They keep spending more. They talk about savings and then spend more, and they do it every year. And, you know, in some senses, that's democracy. That's what the people want. But now the rooster has come home, or the hen's come home to the roost, whatever that.
No, I think you got it close on the second one, yeah.
Something, right?
Right.
And, you're going to have to pay the bill. And all of a sudden, there are no good alternatives. They cannot raise taxes, because they're going to drive people out of the city to other states with, I mean, our taxes are starting to get to be so high that it really will get some people to move. And you don't have to have very many people to move. You just have to drive those at the higher rate out. And so when people say nobody's going to move, that's not true. Last year or the year before, 100 people paid 10% of our personal income tax. 100 people, 5,000 paid 30%.
100 people paid 10%?
100 people paid 10% of our personal income tax, 5,000 paid 30%, and 30,000 paid 50%. And, you know, you don't have to have very many of those at the top move to really hurt us. So raising taxes, and it also drives the businesses. We need jobs in the city. And if you drive out the people who would create those jobs, everybody suffers. And that's why I'm riled against the federal government for screaming about the finance industry. The average person in New York City who works in finance makes $70,000 a year. These are not rich people. And their jobs go away when you start screaming about the banks and other parts of the finance business. We need to get more jobs here, not drive them away.
Man, I've got to tell you, that's an extraordinary statistic you just threw out, that 100 people pay 10%.
It is very very highly concentrated in a handful of people. And those people, we have to keep them here, and we want people from around the world to come and move here, particularly those who are going to pay a lot of taxes. That's how we pay our teachers and firefighters and police officers. And, you know, and we're working as hard as we can in the city to get businesses to come here and stay here, because we need the jobs and we need the tax base to support it. And if the state can't raise taxes, you say, well, then let's go cut services, except that if they cut services dramatically, a lot of municipalities won't be able to function. That's they're depending on state monies to pay their teachers, and we do too. The state gives us almost not quite, but 45%, I think, of our $21 billion in education aid. And we need that money. It's our money. I mean, we send the money up there, and we get a little bit of it back.
Let me ask you this question. Does the city and the state, as the major employers, do they have to pay the mobility tax?
Absolutely. Yep.
I mean, that seems, I don't know, I think the cat just caught its tail.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you can argue it's not hurting you because it's a circular thing. You're keeping the money from the city in the city. On the other hand, it's coming out of the private sector's pockets and going into the public sector. So it's not exactly just, bookkeeping entry. It's another tax. And if we have to pay the taxes ourselves, some of that revenue gets recycled into different places, and I think nonprofits have to pay as well. There was a big fight about that. I'm trying to remember how that came out. Maybe some of them were exempt, I think.
I believe they were, yes,
yeah.
I remember.
But look, we've got ourselves in a situation where we've become dependent on a revenue stream that isn't there. Now what do you do?
Well,
it requires leadership in Albany. We've balanced the city budget. We will have a balanced city budget as long as the state doesn't change anything. And that's what we should do in the city. And the people of the city, you know, I was just looking to see what was happening with the snow removal. And even today, we've got a whole bunch of people out there still clearing. You can incidentally put your refuse out. Alternate side of the street parking is suspended today, but we still have 970-odd, something like that, workers shoveling out fire hydrants and things like that. So put your trash out. We're going to pick it up. Where does the money come from to pick it up? From your taxes. The city's paying for the services, and they're getting them.
All right. One of the things out of the Obama administration, Arnie Duncan, raced to the top for schools across the country, and there are some rules and regulations or qualifications that must be met by the states. Teachers' tenure tied to scores, or teacher evaluation tied to student scores, and I understand tenure will now use that as one of its. And the UFT says they're going to sue the city over this, or might sue the city.
Well, I don't know. So the city, the way we read the law, we can use the state passed the law saying you couldn't do it, but the way they wrote the law will expire before the people that it would apply to ever get to the point where it's 3 years into your employment where we decide give you tenure or not. And in the past, it was virtually automatic. There was almost nobody, you know, one or two people a year out of thousands and thousands and thousands that were denied tenure. And we want to use the test scores. It's just one of the pieces one of the data points that you use, but it's certainly one that should be used. After all, a teacher's job is to teach the kids. How do you know where they teach the kids? Anecdotal evidence is not the right ways. There, you do testing, like in the private sector and everything we do in life. In your case, John, they look at something called ratings. That's your test.
That certainly is every day.
And if you don't pass the test, your kids don't eat.
You're exactly right, and they continue to keep this show on, this hour of this particular show.
Well, yeah, I'm sure, because this probably gets the highest rating.
It does indeed. Mr. Mayor, I've got a bunch of those listeners that want to ask you some questions. Let me take a break, and we will get to them. 800-321-0710. Mike has one line open. He's tough to get through. See if you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg. 800-321-0710. Coming right back.
John Gambling and Mayor Mike, News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
All right, here we go. It's your turn with Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the John Gambling Show, 7 now before 9 o'clock. We're going to start with Brad from Roslyn. Brad, good morning. Here with John Gambling. Go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Gambling, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
Taking my call.
Yes, what's your question?
My question is, what is happening with the early intervention home-based component within the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene?
Well, I'm not sure which, because I have a number of early intervention programs. I'm not sure which one you're talking about. You know, if you can get a young child, even before they're born, on the road to a healthy life, it saves for the rest of their lives an awful lot of pain and expense and prolongs their life. And we have things like nurse family partnerships, which are trying to help young mothers with prenatal care and making sure that once the babies are born that the mothers know how to take care of them. We're trying to make sure kids get their shots and that their parents know, get them started out on not eating junk food but eating stuff that's healthy for you. Unfortunately, one-third of the kids in our city, it's estimated, that are overweight. And if you're overweight as a child, statistics show there's a good chance you'll be overweight as an adult. And if you're overweight, your life expectancy is worse, and you can't enjoy life as much. So, you know, we've got to work on all of these programs at the same time. And our Department of Health and mental hygiene is working with the Department of Youth Services and particularly with the Department of Education, because a lot of this stuff, the ways you can interface with kids is through the schools. Almost all kids do show up in school, so it's the one place that you can be sure to try to get them on the straight and narrow. Unfortunately, as they get to be teenagers and we try to keep improving the food in the schools, they just go out and go and get some junk food outside. So unfortunately, you can't just give them the good stuff, but we're working on it. Thanks for your call.
Hey, Mr. Mayor, last week a lady by the name of Isha had a question about the MTA. She was from Queens.
And we're working on it. I have not forgotten Isha, and we will have an answer for her next week. I think it's Isha Lauren.
It is. Isha Lauren. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Let's go to Fred on the line here from Staten Island. Fred, you've got the mayor. What's your question?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Happy to do it.
Governor Christie announced today he's cutting spending by $2 billion by executive order. I just received my property tax bill, and for the second year in a row, my taxes have gone up, and my property value has gone down. Why does the city maintain this double standard?
Well, let me first explain the property taxes. The property taxes are based on assessment, but the law says they can only go up a certain percentage each year and a certain percentage every 5 years. And so what happened for all of those years when property values were going up very fast, property taxes, while they were going up, did not go up at the same rate. And so now they're still going up because they're playing catch-up ball, if you will. Now, if you take a look at our budget for the next couple of years, I pointed out that that trend is going to continue. And now you're going to start to see property taxes start falling. And people, while the value of their houses is low, even when they start coming back, they'll have a period where we're on the other side of the curve. So that's why your property taxes keep going up, even though we all know that the property values on average are down. Now, in terms of Chris Christie, New Jersey's got the same problems New York does. They don't have any money. They've underfunded a lot of their pension plans. They've made commitments long term that they're going to have a very difficult time in honoring. And the new governor, who I've had dinner with, he's a very nice guy. He's going to have a tough time. He can do some things, I'm sure, by executive order, but in the end, he's going to have the same problem that New York's governor is going to have. You have to work with the legislature. It's a democracy, and the legislatures are much more interested in their local communities, and they don't mind cutting and raising revenues, just do it both in the other guy's community, and that's where the rubber hits the road, and it's very difficult to get these done. So I certainly wish Governor Christie good luck. I think he's dead right. He's got to get the budget under control. Otherwise, New Jerseyans aren't going to have the kind of future they want. But he's going to have problems, and he knows that.
All right, let's go to Barbara in the Bronx. Barbara, your question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Good morning, sir. We have a power plant in Co-op City in the Bronx.
Yep.
We constantly have articles in the newspaper. They're having technical difficulties. They've let their staff go, whatever. In view of what happened in Connecticut, we'd like to know, do you send inspectors in to make sure everything is okay here?
I will double check. I'm pretty sure we do, but you can rest assured I will on Monday, Tuesday, make sure that we are inspecting. I think that there's no reason to think that they are not safe, but we will double check. And it's a good thing that you worry about it. You're right. We should all worry. And unfortunately, as we cut back the monies we have to spend get lower, and we have to cut back, we got to make sure that safety isn't compromised. And that's just not true just in power plants. It's true in everything. And the great challenge that city government and state government has is how do you not reduce the services that people really need at the same time you spend less? And it's everybody tightening up a little bit, everybody working harder, everybody doing a little bit more for less. And that's the only ways we're going to get through this.
All right, we only have a second or so left, unfortunately, Mr. Mayor, but I got a question for you. Do you, as mayor, have executive powers like Chris Christie used yesterday?
You can not spend monies, but, there's a practical aspect. Once you start down a road, it's hard to cut back. But, yes, we do not have to spend all the monies. And, in fact, the $1.5 billion that we are saving with this seventh program to eliminate the gap that we've had already. This is for $1.5 billion, and that's done because the mayor says to the agencies, you will cut back, period.
Which is exactly an executive order.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, that's going to do it for us today, sir. Thank you very much. We'll look forward to seeing you back in the studio next week.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you very much. Michael Bloomberg, ladies and gentlemen, with his weekly get-together with us. And our week is over. I see from JJ's forecast, as she's been talking about, maybe some snow come Monday night into Tuesday. But the rest of the weekend looks pretty darn good for your romancing and your valentining and everything else. So enjoy the weekend. We'll catch up with you back here on Monday morning at News Talk Radio 710 WOR. John Gambling here. Have a good one. Bye.